Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, April 28. Hello again. It's been a while since I've had the opportunity to sit at this microphone and talk to you about happenings in the marketplace on Wall Street, the oil market, grains, and livestock. I've had an unexpected springtime, and most of it spent in Arizona recuperating from leg bypass surgery, but it's been a slow recovery. Everything is coming together, and I'm looking forward to once again being full speed on the air, visiting with you here on the markets. Let me also thank Steve Alexander and the production crew who put the program together every week, because this all started back on March 1st when I had my first surgery. So thanks to all of those people who did what they did to keep the markets together and to keep Orion together. So what kind of a week did we have on Wall Street? The Wall Street trade slipped today on weak data of the gross domestic product, but for the month, prices were higher in April. Today, though, they moved lower after data showing the U.S. economy grew at its weakest pace in 3 years in the first quarter gave traders a reason to cash in recent gains. However, we have not stopped setting records on Wall Street, because today we saw the NASDAQ trade at a record high. Major indices closed up for April, with the NASDAQ up for 6 consecutive months, and that's the longest streak in nearly 4 years. Gross domestic product grew at a 0.7% annual rate, below the 1.2% increase estimated by economists. Consumer spending barely increased, and businesses invested less in inventory. The economy grew at a 2.1% pace in the fourth quarter. Now, the soft growth data is not the best news for the Trump administration after campaign promises to significantly boost growth and adds to concerns among some in the market that lower taxes, deregulation, increased government spending, the main reasons for a post-election rally, will be at the least delayed. But let us keep in mind, I don't know what's so vital about the first 100 days that a president is in office, because there's not much that happens in the first 100 days. If you go back and look at history, this 100-day premise started back in the days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt to measure the progress and the promises made by the candidate during the campaign. So for the month now, the Dow rose 1.3%. The S&P added 0.9%. The NASDAQ gained 2.3%. And the NASDAQ composite increases for 6 straight months, longest streak in nearly 4 years. As we take a look at the week, the Dow up 1.9%, the S&P added 1.5%, the NASDAQ was up 2.3%. And Congress finally did come together and vote a bill to keep the government open for business and operating. The Republican-led Congress averted a government shutdown and gave lawmakers another week to work out federal spending through September 30th. But there are some very tricky issues like defense spending still unresolved. The Senate today passed a stopgap spending bill by voice vote without opposition after the House earlier approved it by a tally of 382 to 30. The measure goes now to the desk of President Donald Trump. So it's been that kind of a week on Wall Street, and at least we know the government is going to continue to operate at least for several more days. Looking at the week ahead, well, we're in the midst of earnings reports, and boy, we We got a slug of them this week, and we'll get a slug of them next week. Apple is expected to post its second straight quarter of revenue growth on Tuesday, helped by sales of its high-end smartphones, particularly the iPhone 7 Plus. Tuesday, the Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee's two-day meeting on interest rates will commence, with their decision announced on Wednesday. And then during the week, we're going to see several other appearances by some of the regional governors of the Federal Reserve. Attention will shift to next week's April employment report. Manufacturing and services sector surveys for confirmation that a sharp slowdown in economic growth in the first quarter was an aberration. The Institute for Supply Management will likely report Monday that its national manufacturing index slipped. Also on Monday, the Commerce Department expected to report that consumer spending increased 0.3% in March. On Wednesday, the ISM likely to report that its non-manufacturing index increased to 55.8 in April, up slightly from March. And then on Thursday, the Commerce Department expected to show the trade deficit rose to $44.5 billion in March, and that would be up from the $43.6 billion deficit reported in February. Also on Thursday, the Labor Department likely to report that productivity increased at a 0.2% annualized rate in the first quarter, after rising at a 1.3% pace in the fourth quarter. And then comes Friday, the Labor Department's closely watched employment report expected to show non-farm payrolls increased 180,000 in April, after rising 89,000 in March. The unemployment rate is forecast to move a little bit higher, up to 4.6% from the current 4.5%. And average hourly earnings expected to have increased. And indeed, this week, we ended the week with a report that labor costs are going up, indicating that the employment picture is improving. As far as earnings reports, social media giant Facebook expected to post a jump in first quarter revenue on Wednesday. Three of the largest U.S. insurers, American International Group, MetLife, and Prudential, scheduled to hold earnings calls to discuss results announced after the market closes on Wednesday. And all eyes will be on the AIG report, whose board is hunting for a new CEO after a large 2016 fourth quarter loss shook stockholders. MasterCard, the world's number two payments network, expected to report an increase in revenue and profit on Tuesday. Pfizer expected to post weaker first quarter revenue before the bell on Tuesday. And we take a look at Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, and that conglomerate run by the billionaire expected to report first quarter results on Friday after the markets close. Time Warner, which is being bought by AT&T, expected to report an increase in first quarter revenue on Wednesday. And Tesla Incorporated is scheduled to report first quarter results on Wednesday, again after the markets close. Mondelez International's first quarter profit likely to beat estimates on Tuesday, helped by cost cuts through its zero-based budgeting plan. And separately, Kraft Heinz Company's quarterly revenue growth is likely to have slowed as the company has been forced to adjust its products as shoppers increasingly turn away from packaged foods for fresher items and those perceived to be healthier. ConocoPhillips, the largest independent oil company in the United States, expected to swing to a quarterly profit on Tuesday, helped by an increase in oil prices. Humana reports first quarter earnings before the bell on Wednesday. And that's just a small part of the earnings reports that will be released by U.S. companies in the week ahead. Promises to be another busy week on the earnings report scene. and again, one that investors will continue to watch, along with what, if any, progress President Trump makes in tax reform and in trade reform and all of the other activities that he is working on. It was rather interesting. This week, I think those in power in Washington like to float rumors, and we saw that this week when it was announced by a spokesman in the White House that President Trump was going to have an order drafted to pull the United States out of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement that we've been involved in 30 years. Response to that announcement that this was being considered was quick and furious from agricultural groups, commodity groups in the United States that immediately jumped out and said, wait a minute, that's too valuable for the economy at the moment. And we have a new Secretary of Agriculture because finally, Sonny Perdue, the governor of Georgia, was confirmed by the Senate and sworn in, and boy, went to work right away. As a matter of fact, called a meeting of agricultural leaders in the White House to talk about agriculture and its mission and its challenges. He called it a farmers' roundtable, and apparently it will continue during his time in the White House. Well, one of those who attended, the Iowa Agriculture Secretary, Bill Northey. And we'll talk to Bill about what happened at that meeting when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Joining me on the line today, Bill Northey, who is an influential gentleman in the world of agriculture, nationally, internationally, but particularly in Iowa, where he serves as Secretary of Agriculture. And Bill, good to have you on the line. And the first thing I want to talk about is we wait 2 months to get a Secretary of Agriculture, and then we got into this week, and all of a sudden, all sorts of activity, beginning with the Farmers Round Table. You were part of that, right?
I was. There were 14 farmers that were part of that round table, as well as the brand new Secretary of Agriculture, and then we all met with the president. So 15 folks with the president in the round table in the West Wing, the Roosevelt Room of the White House, and we had about an hour with the president to talk about our issues, and the president was very engaged in good conversation.
What about questions that he asked? Were they pertinent questions to the issues that bother you and a lot of other farmers?
They were. As we went around the room and folks introduced themselves and talked a little bit about the issues they were concerned about, I'd say the issues that we spent more time on and certainly kept coming up were issues around immigration and ag labor, being able to have labor on our farms and our processing plants. He certainly heard those concerns, was very interested in being able to limit our illegal immigration, but be able to have a legal ag labor force that can come from outside the U.S. as well. Folks were very pleased to be able to hear about that. We talked about trade and the issues around trade and the concerns, how important trade is for us, but also the concerns that folks have in areas where we need improvement, including being able to expand our exports into China. We talked about infrastructure investment. There is an effort, it looks like, likely over the next few months of creating some infrastructure investment. What would that look like? Locks and dams, roads and bridges. But we also talked about broadband, rural broadband, and being able to connect our tractors and our farms to the internet and all the information services that we have out there, as well as ag research. So then the fourth area, and we've already seen a lot of activity from the administration on, is regulatory reform. From Waters of the U.S., that he's very proud to have stopped and taken a different direction, to other conversations around regulations like Food Safety Modernization Act and other regulations that can impact the farm, and the federal government would have a role in being able to make those the regulations still, for example, be effective on food safety, but not be so negative on the impact on our farms.
You mentioned locks and dams, and Bill, for five decades I've been talking about my concern over the crumbling waterway system in the central part of the country. Do you think there's any chance we're finally going to get some rebuilding and refurbishing started on the river system?
Well, yeah, I sure hope so, Orion, because you're exactly right. That is a huge issue, and we've passed Water Resources Development Act's WRDAs in the past, and we thought the issue was solved, and we go through engineering studies, and yet no dollars come. We did not get a commitment that that's where dollars would go to, but it was certainly well-received that locks and dams are important in transportation, not only for exports, but even for internal transportation that we need within agriculture here as we move our products around, or the products that we use from fertilizer and other products that move up and down the river, that is important. But so I think ag is very focused on that being one of those things that they want a part of the conversation, but we're, I guess, a long ways away from seeing whether it's going to be one of those investment tools. We don't even yet know, you know, how many dollars will be invested, right, or how they're going to sort through all the needs.
Immigration labor, we normally think of California and Arizona and the lettuce fields as the immigration labor headquarters, but you have a lot of the migrant laborers in the state of Iowa and throughout the Midwest, don't we?
Oh, we do. From our dairy farms, where folks need an H-2A program that allows folks to be able to stay year-round to be able to work on farms, to our processing plants, certainly some of our pork production as well. We also had representatives in the group that were from the nursery business. Obviously, that is an area that matters, as well as the horticulture business and the fresh fruits and vegetables business. So there was certainly a lot of folks from different areas that cared a lot about having a working H-2A program. Some of them were reasonably happy with how it's working, but needed some more flexibility. Others had some real concerns about how it was working. And then just kind of that uncertainty that employees are feeling, as well as employers are feeling, in what's next. They need some certainty about what kind of changes are coming, so everybody can know how they can find themselves and find workers in a new system. And as of now, that's still not been fully defined.
And then finally, after the Farmers Roundtable, we get word that the White House is drawing up a resolution that would take us out of NAFTA. Quick reaction to that if we were to go out of the North American Free Trade Agreement, Bill.
Well, it, obviously NAFTA has been very good for agriculture. A lot of beef and pork and dairy exports to Mexico. Lots of cross-border trade as well with Canada. So we need that agreement. We need there certainly are ways that it could improve. There were some aspects of TPP that would have improved it. If this is a part of a negotiating strategy to get some more of those aspects, then I think folks wouldn't be that worried about it and see it be effective. If this is part of an effort to actually walk away from that agreement, then there'd be a lot of concern in agriculture and a big impact to agriculture.
So finally, I do have one more question. How's planting progress in the state of Iowa?
Just getting a good start. As of Monday, the report was 8% of our corn that was planted, a little bit behind the five-year average in last year. I know a little bit more got done early this week, but it's been cold and wet since then in much of the state, and so that progress has stopped a little bit. So I'd say most folks would say they're a little bit behind, not worried yet, but anxious to get those planters rolling again.
Always a pleasure to visit with you, sir. Bill Northey, who is Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Iowa.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
With everything else happening in the world of agriculture and trade this week, we had what was termed the milk war with Canada. Well, what's that all about? A lot of people are a little uncertain what it's doing to the dairy economy. So let's turn to the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Wisconsin, America's Dairyland. We'll talk to Ben Brancel, the secretary there, who first of all explains what the milk war is all about.
There is a product that Canada has been importing from the United States called ultra-filtered milk. It's a product that they use in their cheese-making systems. It's a product that the processors of Canada have requested, have increased purchases over time. And in fact, for the state of Wisconsin, it meant about a million milk pounds equivalent. So it takes a million pounds of milk to produce the amount of product each day that Canada was interested in purchasing. And that has increased over time. So, of course, you base your production and your processing and your on the market. And then Canada decided to change its pricing structure internally to directly target this product called ultra-filtered milk, so that it would no longer be advantageous for their processors to buy it.
And that started what we're calling a war. Okay, let's take it down to the individual dairy farmer in Wisconsin. Did it affect many dairy farmers?
Well, we had information initially that there were about 75, but we actually ended up with, as a count, was 58 farmers in Wisconsin, and a number of farmers in Minnesota received letters from a company here in the state of Wisconsin that said your milk is no longer needed because the market that your milk was being funneled into is no longer available to us. And that was a Canadian decision that was made. I think Grassland, the company that was selling products to Canada, and there were two companies in New York State as well, were basing their production on that marketplace. And we had heard about their pricing changes a long time ago, way back in early 2016. We had engaged in discussions with the Canadians at all levels, trying to get them to comprehend that this is not a good situation. It would directly impact farms in our states, and that we would ask them to reconsider. And we had hoped that they would when we had various discussions, but they ultimately did not, and it led to some of our farmers losing their milk market.
And not easy to find another buyer for that milk, I would assume.
No, right now the amount of milk being produced in the United States is very large. In the state of Wisconsin, we are producing 30 billion pounds of milk each year at the present time. Our processing capabilities in the state of Wisconsin are capable of handling all of that milk. But with the excessive amounts of milk coming from New York and Michigan and other states at very cheap rates, undercutting the marketplace, it's meant that we have more milk than we actually have available capacity for it.
So what is the next step in this war? What are we going to do?
Well, our first step here was to try to find a place in that milk pipeline that farmers would have a home for their milk. We have been working diligently here at the Department of Ag. We've been supported by farm organizations. Processors have stepped up. Milk handlers have stepped up where individual farms had to find a new home very quickly. That's kind of the short term. In the long run, we're going to have to think through how we manage milk supplies in this country. I don't think they can be managed by the government, but I do believe there has to be more communications between the farmers out there and their processors, and the processors being more open about their marketplace.
The Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Wisconsin, Ben Brancel, joining us here on The Markets. Well, as we look at closing prices in livestock trade, pretty good week for the cattle market. Wholesale beef demand up sharply. Maybe it's the fact that we're moving into spring, I'm not sure. But we did see live cattle hit another year high again today, with the April live cattle contract at $138, up $2.40 a hundredweight. Meanwhile, the June lean hog contract was up $1.15. It ended the day at $74 a hundredweight. And then turning to the grain market, where will we start there on Monday? Well, the July wheat contract ended half a cent higher at 432 and a quarter. The July corn contract down 3 3/4 at 366 and a half. And the July soybean contract ended the week at 956 and a quarter. And that's down 1 3/4 cents. So that's where the market's traded, and we're looking ahead to another interesting week on Wall Street and in the commodity world next week. Thank you for joining us. I'm Orion Samuelson, your host this week on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.